Well, a day doesn't go by when you don't hear something about self-driving car technology. Google's self-driving car project called Waymo, that's an odd name, will soon be real-world testing in Phoenix, Arizona. On the downside was the recent fatality of a driver using the autopilot mode in a Tesla. The technology's boosters promise all sorts of benefits, from drastically reduced traffic fatalities to much higher energy efficiency and a much more relaxing commute. But skeptics point out serious flaws in security, making the car's software hackable, as well as questions about how self-driving cars will interact with the mix of human-driven cars on the streets. Here to talk to us about self-driving cars and answer any questions you might have about your own car is Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive on our monthly Squeaky Wheel segment. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, John.
So how exactly does a self-driving car work?
Well, that's a great question. It's not much different from the principles of robotics, if you've ever read about how a robot works. But cars already have a lot of technology in them in the form of inputs and outputs. So cars looking at various bits of information and then making decisions based off of that information. To add self-driving capabilities really didn't require much additions in the form of outputs. It just required some more inputs, and mainly in the form of cameras and lasers and radar, sonar type of sensing instruments. But a lot of the other various inputs and outputs were already at play. And so basically a car is going to need to know certain information before it can make decisions based off that information. And so right now what these test cars are doing on say the campus of Google or the MIT test cars, they're out gathering information and building the artificial neural network or the deep learning network. And by building that network and training and enhancing that network by constant exposure to as real world scenarios as possible, which right now they're in closed campuses, but once they go out into the real world, they can enhance that neural network even more. They're training the network so that the car can adapt to and continuously learn and enhance its own network, which is what's considered deep learning. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the car then becomes functional.
So clearly we're not going to all just shift en masse to self-driving cars. So clearly they have to have some kind of adaptability to deal with the fact that they're going to be, for many, many years to come, humans piloting cars on the roads. And humans are not part of that neural network.
Right. And I think that's one of the issues that they're trying to overcome is the unpredictability of humans. So, especially pedestrians doing unpredictable things and pedestrians sharing the roadway, crosswalks, for example, or bicyclists in cities. And so that's certainly one of their biggest challenges, I would think.
Some of that technology is rolling out already. I mean, I know that there are increasing numbers of large delivery trucks, for example, that are being equipped with sensors that will alert them to a pedestrian or a cyclist coming along in a spot that might be a blind spot for that mm-hmm. for that truck driver. There are also self-parking cars. We have some friends that we were treated to a demonstration in Germany of they just have a kind of garden variety Volkswagen, but mm-hmm. it parks itself. They yeah. said, "Hey, watch this."
It's pretty incredible.
The driver took his hands off the wheel and the car made a perfect parallel park.
Right. And so if you use that very small or simplified example, what's happening is you tell the car, "Okay, park yourself." It needs to know that's what you want. And then the car takes over and it's going to use some sensors on the back bumper and sensors on the front bumper and probably a camera. And so depending, let's just say it has 5 or 7 sensors, it's going to decipher all of the information it receives from those inputs. Those are inputs. And then it's going to use an actuator a couple of actuators, one for the steering wheel, which is going to turn the steering wheel, and the other one for the accelerator. And then it uses the already existing computerized braking system. We've been using anti-lock brakes and computerized brakes for decades now. We've been using fly-by-wire accelerators for decades. Airplanes have been using them for, you know, 50 years, something like that. So using a lot of existing technology, and it's going to steer that car right into a parking space, and it's going to know when to begin to slow down, when to completely stop, how to accelerate at a controlled pace. It's very precise. And many people would argue that this is going to be a huge safety enhancement for communities that are using these types of vehicles, because it takes out the human error. And that's maybe a whole nother topic. But that's one, you know, insurance companies are very interested in this technology because they know the math and the statistics tell them that it is going to be safer. It's going to be far less auto crashes and far less fatalities. And similarly, you know, like you hinted, large corporations, I think Walmart is probably, from what last I read, investing heavily in this type of technology because of the sheer amount of semis they have on the road making deliveries. If they can increase their efficiency, reduce injury and or fatalities, it's just a win-win for them. And so if you think about the size of their fleet, how many semis they have on the road, how much cost savings can happen in just terms of the bottom line.
Right, the warehouse on wheels. We're talking about self-driving cars, which actually was a topic suggested by a listener a few months back with Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive, part of our monthly Squeaky Wheel segment. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 or shoot us an email during the live broadcast at jx@jeffnet.org. We have Carter in Wolf Creek who has a comment. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not impressed at all with the whole concept of self-driving anything. And there's two fundamental reasons why. One is read QED by Richard Feynman about quantum physics and the actual world that we live in. And then review Gödel's theorem where you cannot make a system internally consistent. And there you have the limitations of trying to make robotics of any sort. And you also, in addition to that, have the not very good record of the railroad safety on the railway tracks in this country. And there have been some pretty dramatic accidents in railway stations, let alone out on the tracks. And a lot of this has been highly controlled by technology, and a great history of failures there. And then the fourth or fifth reason why you don't want to go in the direction of robotics in transportation is that it really, really complicates the insurance issues, and we've already got a mess with that as well. So that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Carter. That's bringing up some really, really interesting ideas there and concerns. You mentioned the insurance companies. What happens when a self-driving car gets into an accident with a car piloted by a human? Is the human automatically assumed to be at fault?
Well, yeah, this is all speculation, I guess, but I would think not. I mean, certainly these neural networks that the autonomous vehicles are utilizing are not, at this point, they're not refined and they're not mastered. And I don't know if they ever will be mastered. I think they're set up to where they're continuously learning. And I think that I would hope that in the event of an accident, investigation would be carried out just like with any other accident and determine what happened and who's at fault. And I would by no means think that an autonomous vehicle would be infallible in terms of, you know, hitting a pedestrian or, and you mentioned that, that driver, the unfortunate incident where the driver was killed in the Tesla
in autopilot mode. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think from my understanding of that incident, I mean, a lot of people don't understand that the Tesla is not a fully autonomous vehicle. It is not a level 5 self-driving car. It's a level 3 or 4, from my understanding, which means that you are expected to still pay attention to the road and be ready to take over control of that vehicle at any moment's notice. And if I understand, and I guess I should be careful, but I thought maybe that driver was either taking a nap or watching a movie, and maybe or maybe not. But, you know, that Tesla's response to that incident was just that. It's like these cars are not fully autonomous.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a level 5 self-driving car. And so you have to be ready. It's a pretty primitive level of autonomy at this point.
We just got an email from Larry in Arcata here on the Jefferson Exchange. He said that perhaps when we all have self-driving cars, we can train our pets to take themselves to the dog park.
Yeah.
we're talking with Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive, our monthly squeaky wheel segment, and this month talking about self-driving cars. Now, there are Google's working on a system. Tesla, as you mentioned, has its sort of semi-autonomous system, and there are clearly other companies working on them as well. What happens if we get to a situation where these cars are now going to be on the roads, but we have competing systems?
Yeah, so I think that's going to be the neural network that we're really talking about. So for Tesla, they've already equipped all their vehicles with all of the inputs and outputs required. The only thing Tesla's really waiting on is the programming, the updated set of instructions, which is going to be the final, okay, now you're fully autonomous, no, you're not. And so that's what everybody's competing for, is that neural network that's the most reliable and the most enhanced and has learned and been exposed to the most amount of environmental conditions. And so I, just like in any marketplace, as a business person, my thoughts tend to go in the direction of there, you know, there's going to be maybe one or two leaders which emerge. And in the end, will there be more than one? I don't know. Will they share technology and kind of come together and exchange, like, or maybe blend these neural networks? And when you read about these neural networks, they're a whole bunch of matrices basically that are being multiplied by each other to create one end output. So the matrices are all sorts of conditions that are out there that exist, you know, crosswalks, stoplights, weird intersections that aren't perfectly, you know, aren't perfect perpendicular,
mm-hmm.
just all the different abnormalities, those are all intended to be accounted for into a matrix, which is then multiplied by the known conditions. And so it does beg the question, you know, how many technologies and how many platforms are going to be available? And of course, there's going to be, the government is going to be heavily involved in this, and they're going to have a lot to say about it. And I'm sure they already are with the National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration, mm-hmm. putting forth, you know, regulations. And so there's a lot to consider when talking about this stuff. But I think, you know, before it's all said and done, the government is probably going to have the biggest say.
We had a cybersecurity expert on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he said really unconditionally that he would not drive in a self-driving car or mm-hmm. ride in a self-driving car because he was so concerned about the security of the software. And if you look at the so-called Internet of Things that we're kind of starting to experience, and the fact that there were huge denial of service attacks that were rolled out about 6 months ago using things that are connected to the Internet but not necessarily personal computers, things like security cameras and people's refrigerators and smart TVs. He was extremely concerned about the security of the software. And that's one of the biggest concerns that you read again and again and again about self-driving cars, which, you know, if you look at it, all somebody would have to do would be to hack one car, the right car, and they could cause a great deal of damage. Have you read anything about what's being done to make sure that these systems are secure?
No, I haven't really. I know that the intention, though, is for all of these cars, at least right now, to have a manual override to be able to just instantly take it out of the autonomous mode. And I think that those concerns are really valid as far as, you know, the technology being vulnerable, and or the network of a particular vehicle being really vulnerable. And I'm always a healthy skeptic of technology myself, so that would be a concern I would have too. Again, it remains to be seen how this is all going to play out. It's really fascinating, but I know a lot of people that share those same the same opinion that, you know, I just want to drive my car. I'll never drive in an autonomous car. I think there's going to be a place for autonomous vehicles in the beginning, and it's going to be with the ride sharing, or you know, say you want to, you need to get somewhere, and it's an overnight kind of like a, you know, red eye flight. Well, you could rent an autonomous vehicle to take you to LA while you can get some sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds frightening to me, but there might be some people who will utilize that, and I think we'll kind of dip our toes in the water, and eventually the world is going to be a very different place. But in terms of the rollout of this in the next couple of years, which they're really talking about, in just two or three more years, we're going to start seeing it.
Wow.
I think that's how it's going to happen.
Zach Edwards from Ashland Automotive, our Squeaky Wheel segment. We've been talking about self-driving cars. Thanks for being with us.
Hey,
see you next month.
Yeah, thank you.